Hey everybody, how's it going? This is Boss Barrel Radio Game of the Year Discussion 2014. My name is Griff Hoffman, and with me, fighting it out, is Jeff Brewer.
Was that a Tactic Ogre reference, you sly little dog?
Nope. And?
Damn it.
outing the fight, James Scherer.
When the world ends... something.
Did the PlayStation version of Tactics Ogre not have the fight it out stupid little voice clip that played whenever you got in a battle?
I couldn't afford the PlayStation version of Tactics Ogre.
I take this from the GBA version. Game of the Year 2014. Spoiler alert.
Nailed it. So that's what we're here to do. It's sleeves are rolled out. We're gonna get in elbows deep to the Game of the Year for 2014.
What?
Get your Google Docs ready.
they're good to go.
Google makes docs?
Google dogs. Sorry.
Can we talk about your dad's trip to Urban Outfitters instead, Jamie?
Yeah.
We got to save that for another time. This is strictly business.
No.
Damn it.
We'll tease them for next time.
Yeah. Stay tuned for 2000 Griffteen when we talk about Mr. Scherer's trip to Urban Outfitters.
Did you just say 2000 Griffteen?
Another spoiler for next year.
Man wants a year all to himself. No one can have all that power. Only the
Luigi squandered it. He had more than a year and he did nothing with it.
He had a death stare. That's all he needed.
It wasn't even within his year.
The year of Luigi never ends in your heart.
Well, speaking of never ending, you guys want to talk about some games you played this year? Specifically, maybe your top 10s?
Sure. I suppose.
Who's most ready? Who wants to go first?
It's up to you, Jeff.
All right.
I think Jamie wants to
flip a coin. Flip a coin.
I'll do it.
Okay.
I'll just run down my list, and I'll do it in my extremely new age, cutting edge way that I did, where I'll do number one first. My favorite game of the year, even though I'm only 30 hours into an 80-hour game, is Dragon Age Inquisition. And it's...
You want to phone a friend on that choice?
It's hilarious. I was explaining it to some friends of mine who don't really game that much the other night, and I was explaining how it's funny how I like this game so much when it is so amazingly buggy even after patches. I spent about half an hour just telling them about my favorite bugs, and everyone was laughing and rolling on the floor. Ooh. My new favorite bug is I was in a really serious conversation, but it wasn't a cutscene conversation. So there were NPCs milling around me. And I was talking to this character, and this NPC just rolls up and walks right in front of the NPC I'm talking to. Like, at mid-conversation, mid-super plot point conversation, and just gets right up in their face. And like the shittiest Roomba ever... just keeps trying, but cannot move out of their way. It just stayed there forever. And there are other times, this keeps happening to me, where characters will just start levitating, and then they'll just shoot like rockets towards the nearest wall.
And that's why it's your game of the year.
Game of the year.
And it's got other problems, too. Like, in the beginning of it, I think that the game is the layout is terrible at first. I had no idea what was going on. Things that should have been explained more were not explained at all, and things that didn't really need to be explained were explained. The beginning of the game, in terms of story and like environments, is just piss poor compared with what comes later. But that just should tell you how good what comes later is, because it's my game of the year. And I almost stopped playing because at a certain point I was like, I don't know what's going on with the battle system. I don't know where I'm supposed to go. But I pushed through, and I love the characters in this game. Even the characters which I write off as being super boring, will come back and become extremely interesting and multifaceted and nuanced in a way that few games do. And so the story gets much better and the combat gets much better. I started as a mage and, you know, you're doing your normal mage thing at first. You're doing your AoE spells from afar. You're standing back. But then you unlock these special classes after a while. And I specced into a special mage class, which instead of encouraging you to, you know, hold back, do damage from a distance, and avoid aggro, this is the first time I've ever played a mage in a game where it's like, no, we're going to reward you for, like, getting up there, get in the enemy's faces, use spells to make sure that no one aggroes you, but, like, you get up right in their faces and you do, like, damage almost like a rogue. And if you're able to do that, it's like you'll completely own these enemies, and it's really fun. So that game just did in my mind, it does a complete 180 at about 15 hours. And it's a
ring endorsement.
Yeah. No, but I really love it. And I can't remember. I mean, it's a completely subjective thing, but I can't remember being this engrossed in an RPG since like the FF7, 8, 9 days. And I really love it. I really care about the characters. I think the environments are great. And so that's that. My number two is Monument Valley. I think that's really like the first mobile game I've ever.
Quick audible here. Just to break up the pacing. Do you, Jeff? Let's kick it over to you. What's on the top of your list? Not necessarily game of the year, but just let's round robin.
Gotcha. Wait.
Oh, so I'm gonna do number 10. That's gonna get crazy town.
Well, I mean, if you want to do one, that's fine. I guess we can all do that.
I'm going to do number 5. You just wait.
Okay.
I'm going to do number 1 as well. I'll just go ahead and say mine is also Dragon Age Inquisition. I didn't have quite the level of bugs Jamie had. I did definitely have some bugs, though, like a dude who I just go to click on them to talk. The camera pans around like we're going to start a conversation, and then the camera pans back as if the conversation has ended. I just cannot advance the quest line because of this. And I agree that that is a game that is not, it's not like the most technically sound game, nor is it the best paced game either. But it's been a weird year. I feel like games have been kind of weird this year. And this is a game that is the only game that I feel like has delivered something really, like, something really deeply memorable in terms of like a big meaty, I don't know, AAA experience or whatever that's really going to stick with me. Forgetting Nintendo for a moment, which I just kind of put in their own category, but like even Nintendo didn't have like a crazy Mario game or something this year. They just had kind of their multiplayer stuff. This is like the thing that has been like the most engaging in terms of, you know, awesome story. Like Jamie said, the rare like instance of nuance in a game. Like if you actually read all the little books you can find around the world, you get so much like flavor and lore, which is all good lore. And it just adds like element after element. And you'd think like I read a little primer before I started the game, which it's kind of dumb that you have to read one to really, I mean, you don't have to, but it's kind of dumb that reading one makes it so much better. But even reading this primer, I'm like, oh, so that's how the world is. And then you go and talk to a dude and he's like, you may think that's how the world is, but what about this? And you're like, holy shit, I didn't think of it that way. And that is entirely plausible. And then later in the game, somebody would be like, nope, actually that. And you're like, oh, that's also extremely plausible. And I think one of the coolest things the game does in that regard is like, it doesn't answer the questions. Like it doesn't answer the big questions. Like it's not like, hey, you know, that God that we're always talking about, she does or doesn't exist. It doesn't answer that question. And it actually finds a way to not answer that question in a way that makes the player wonder. And
which is, can I just want to, I'm not going to hijack it. I just want to add to what you're saying. In a game where the main villain claims to have a link to the gods, not answering that question is both difficult and bold. And I think it's awesome.
They pull it off. There are so many nuances in this game. Like even just like the character of the mages, which Jamie plays as. In this game, in the series, the mages are like, they're really powerful, but they can turn bad. And the game resists characterizing the mages as like purely oppressed or purely bad. It's like, hey, you know what? Sometimes they're really bad. And like sometimes they are just completely oppressed. And maybe they're selfish, maybe they're not. It never answers the question. It's like, oh, I don't know. And yeah. There's going to be more fiction, which is going to explore both sides of that coin. And that's really cool. I really like that about the world. I think that's super awesome. I do think the beginning of the game kind of sucks sometimes. It feels a lot more rote. It feels a lot more like every other game in the beginning, especially when you're in that first area where you're just like, hey, find the shards. Find the apostate caches. And you're like, okay, I guess. So that's kind of dumb. But it really opens up once you get farther, and the environments and the little sub-stories contained within them are always, they're always just delightful in one way or another. Like, something cool happens, like you capture a keep, or you change the weather, or you do something cool, and there's always, like, a little story going on that you can read about, and you always, whenever you do more shit in this game, it's just, like, endless things to do. You feel like the shit you're doing is like making a difference. Like, there's always a good reason for you to be doing this shit. And I'm like, how do they keep coming up with good reasons for me to be attacking the main villain in these peripheral ways? But they always do it. Yeah. I don't know if you've had that experience, Jamie. It'll be like, we discovered a vein of red lyrium that Corypheus could be using.
Yeah.
Need to go get it. And then they're like, we found a supply chain of, you're like, how do you keep coming up with plausible things that I could do to weaken this guy? It's really cool. It's a massive game, but it usually pulls it off well. That first part kind of sucks, and that blows. But yeah, it's probably the coolest thing this year, in my opinion.
And also, just to add to what you're saying before you wrap up, I love how they find all these little ancillary quests that do tie in really well with the main thing. And unlike any other game, those little ancillary quests, which are completely throwaway, will have amazing voice acting and amazing writing and an amazing little premise. Yes. And it's just, in other games, they really struggle to give you a reason to be, you know, exploring the world. But this game makes exploring the world exciting, not just because you get to see all these amazing spectacles, but because every time you explore the world, you're opening up the story in the way that relates back to the main story. So you actually care.
Also, you have a unit called Power, and when you do stuff, a big thing goes, Power plus 2.
Yeah!
That's kind of dumb.
No, it's awesome.
It's a great game, though. It's definitely, I feel like it's definitely not perfect, but it does so many cool things, right? And it just grabbed me. It definitely, I can see why people would be averse to it, but it really, really grabbed me. And I think that it's definitely worthwhile in a huge way, and I think it deserves. I think it deserves the title unabashedly, even with its flaws. So, that's all.
Nice.
Griffin's game dead. Of the year. Yeah, I died. Sorry, I was just trying to get out of the hinterlands. My bad.
Well, folks, that's it.
So to continue with this trend, the game that rests atop my list of top 10 of 2014 is Wolfenstein: The New Order.
Oh, nice.
I think that Wolfenstein is unabashedly the greatest game this year, the best experience you can have playing a video game in 2014. It's tight. It is mechanically sound. It is novel, and it's 100% the complete package, and also unexpected, giving it that extra little flavor boost. So to break some of those, who is shuffling a deck of cards or something over there?
That's probably me. Sorry about that.
Oh, Jamie. Jamie, your audio quality is atrocious.
Burn your headphones.
I love them. They are my friends.
Okay, so Wolfenstein, like, it is a first-person shooter, of course. So, you have expectations going into that. And with the preview coverage that was coming out about this game, it did look a little lackluster and a little, rote, unoriginal, just kind of like mundane, just, you know, big burly shooter space marine guy goes and kills zombies. And it does kind of do that, a little bit of a tease right at the beginning with that, but still remains to be interesting with going in like old Germany, World War II era with BJ Blazkowicz. It eventually does the record scratch bit where it's like, oh, wait, what if actually we lost the war? And through the levels, through the level design, through the characters that you meet, and not just like reading a book of that was given to you, like actually experiencing this world, you're seeing things like, man, this is a really cool and interesting interpretation if Nazi Germany had won. Not, you know, it can be a little played out, but there is some depth to it, especially at one of the major turning points of the game when you go to an internment camp. And it just kind of throws you in. Raw dog, really disgusting, like a really kind of jarring moment that happens mid-game, and is just it highlights one of the strengths of Wolfenstein, which is its pacing and its capacity to do something outside the lines of a standard first-person shooter. So you're kind of running around a courtyard area, solving essentially like puzzles and negotiating between characters. It changes the setting entirely. So you're not, you know, running around with two sniper rifles in one in each hand.
But two is better than one, though.
It's true. I mean, and this game proves it. You know, the combat is really fun. You can double wield anything, and it's hilarious and it's silly, but it's also you know, it also works well. Like you can viably play like that. So it has these really like intense, somber moments of like, wow, this is this team doing what it does best is like shaking up the foundations of a first person shooter, where now it's a sneaking mission, but not kind of like your gimped sneaking mission that's just like shoehorned in there. Like it feels weighty and heavy and well designed and plotting and like all the things that are great about stealth games, but in just a one small little rock block instead of your full length, you know, 10-hour game, you're getting all these little bite-sized moments.
I think that game took me 8 hours, though.
It's a short game. It's definitely not a long
game. I'm saying I thought that was a good length. Absolutely. I thought it was perfect. Yeah. I thought that there was nothing in that game that didn't need to be in there. I thought like however long it did take me, it was amazing.
It's paced extremely well. Not only in like overstaying its welcome and not doing that, but just changing up what you're doing in the game. You know, like I said, doing a stealth mission here or there, or just having a home base that you go to where you're listening to conversations with people in the area or watching them perform some activity in the base, or doing like weird little side missions where you're finding information out for them, or doing little like fetch quests for them, or holding a button to go into a nightmare where you play through old Wolfenstein. I don't know. Like to me, it stands out so brightly and so strongly to all the other games this year because it was very direct in what it wanted to do. It was very effective in its game design and in its messaging. And it just was 100% like a flawless video game that felt like it deserved to be on a next gen console. It felt like it was put together extremely well by a well seasoned team. Like there's no negatives about it. It did all that, and then it surprised and it elevated the genre. The end.
Bravo.
This is my summer book report on Wolfenstein.
And that is why I liked Wolfenstein. Hopefully in the future, we all can like Wolfenstein. The end.
Jews aren't the enemy.
Dude, Jews get like awesome robot suits.
Yeah, Jews have Jew magic that allows us to have computers.
No, you need to open every sixth grade book report with if you look up blank in the dictionary. Awesome.
Well, kicking it back to you, Jamie. Everybody has laid their number one choice on the line. Maybe we can power through these next ones a little bit faster.
Yeah, should we just slide down that list with each one of us? Just
I can get through my entire list in a couple minutes.
Crosstalk about it all.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, so my second best game of the year is Monument Valley because it is beautiful and it's the only game that I really think besides Device 6.
That came out last year. You're safe.
Okay, thank God.
I checked.
Whew. Okay. Besides Device 6, that's the only game that I think makes me hopeful for the future of tablet gaming and you know, phone gaming. And at the end of the additional levels for that game, I cried. So there's that. My one after that.
Goddamn baby.
One after that is Shovel Knight. It's the best platformer I've ever played. And oh, it's beautiful and the music is great. Next after that is Mario Kart 8. I hate Mario Kart. And I love this game, and I love playing it with you guys. And everything about it is so polished and so beautiful. And I just have so much fun with it that it's high on the list. After that is Super Smash Bros. For the Wii U. I like the Wii U version better than the 3DS version, pretty much for the same reasons. But this game did a lot of cool things. Like, even though you can only play the Masterpieces demos for like 2 or 3 minutes, I think it's really cool that they threw that in there. And there's a bunch of other little add-ons that like the music mode that just make that game
so good
for fans. Wolfenstein is also on there. I really didn't know where to put Wolfenstein. I really love that game. There is nothing in that game that is not memorable. Every minute of that game is a ton of fun. It is the best kind of comic booky, kind of scratches the same itch as like Tarantino movies kind of game that I've played in a while.
Sin City.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Just it's. I think everyone should play it. It's beautiful too, and like Griffin said, it somehow manages within that kind of goofy, comic booky, pulpy exterior. It shoves in a lot of things that don't normally work in that kind of genre. A lot of touching moments and things like that. So definitely worth everyone's time. After that is Velocity Ultra 2X. Best arcade-y type game that I've played since Pac-Man Championship DX2. After that is Sports Friends. Had just a ton of fun playing that when we're with three buddies when we're drunk. Wolf Among Us is a game that has a lot of problems, but it's probably the best that Telltale will ever do. And takes some ideas that they kind of lay seeds for in the... I can't even remember the name of it. The one with the zombies.
Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead. It takes ideas that it kind of like hints at in that game and actually like embodies them and makes them work. So for that reason, it's on my list. Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze is a great platformer that annoyed the shit out of me when I was playing it. But when I look back on it retroactively, I'm just like, everything in that game is awesome. So that's on there. Bayonetta 2 is on there because that's like probably the most mechanically sound and engaging game I've played all year. And that's my list.
Hey.
Good list, Jamie.
Hey, good
you
list.
You made one small mistake.
Jamie's top 11 games of 2014.
Yeah!
Here's your mistake, Jamie. The best game that Telltale will ever make is not Wolf Among Us. It's actually the Minecraft game that they're going
to make. Oh, you're right.
Because if it has Minecraft in the name, it's the best. It's the rules. You want me to do my stuff, Griff?
Yeah, that seems to be the order.
Okay. My number two is Binding of Isaac Rebirth, which should not come as a surprise to either of you, because I really love Binding of Isaac, and I played it for over 400 hours, because I'm
or he would tell the listener.
Jamie told somebody who had no involvement in making the game that I played it, and I got some pins.
Nice.
Good times. Yeah, it's really cool. You guys, I think, have both played it by now. It's pretty much what Edmund McMillen does to all his games, which is just, I'm going to remake it and add more shit to it, and then keep remaking it and keep adding more shit to it, and it's so good. Because that game, the more shit you put in that game, the more fun it is. And there's a ton of shit in that game, just a ton, and it's the best roguelike of all the roguelikes. My number three, because I did more than 10 games and I didn't have time to figure out which one to get rid of, is Mario Kart 8 and Smash Brothers.
Hey,
as well.
What?
Listen to me. You listen good. Here's why, because I get the same kind of enjoyment out of both of those games. I can just sit down and play them with you guys online and have the best time ever. And I think they both do the same things right. I think they are both like, they both strike a really good balance between like competitive elements and kind of more fun party elements. I think that they both have competent online, which is new for Nintendo. I think they both have pretty good DLC stuff going on. I think Mario Kart 8 is probably better than Smash's, but I'm still pretty excited for whatever they're going to do with that. I just think they're both really great. I think they are two awesome multiplayer experiences on the Wii U. I also like the 3DS game, but I understand if nobody else does because it's fun. And I love
no, I love it. It's a great game.
Shut up, Jane.
I like the Wii U one better, but that's just
My number four is Jazz Punk because it is a really, it manages to be really funny and fun to play. And I don't even know how to describe it except it's kind of basically like a find, it's pretty much like a find the thing game, like find the stuff and click on it. It's basically like a hidden object game except 3D and funny all the time. Mm. And it's like, I guess, how would you describe it, Griff? Like 1950s, like Soviet era spy and stuff. I don't know.
Sure, yeah, like a Bond movie, as if it was presented by Adult Swim.
Yeah, exactly. You said it. That's a great elevator pitch for it. And it's just the humor is so stupid and absurd, and just, you know, dudes come up to you and say weird shit and fart at you, and it's funny all the time. And just things happen and stuff explodes, and I had a really good time with it. And it's really weird. It feels, sometimes it feels kind of slight, but it also, it's just like the goofiest and most entertaining and original indie game I think I played this year. So it's got to be on there. Next I put Captain Toad Treasure Tracker, which probably isn't that surprising to you guys because I love Nintendo games. I really like that game. It's really, really charming and fun. There's some noises happening right now.
Welcome to my life.
So Captain Toad, people probably haven't played it because Nintendo doesn't advertise their games. So they took the diorama minigame from Mario 3D World and they turned that into like a full game. And every level is just like little diorama jam-packed with lots of secrets and awesome stuff. And it's just so charming and so adorable and feels good to play. The level design is awesome. I highly recommend it to both you guys. Really, really fun. Next for me is number six, the Danganronpa series.
Another double I see here.
Yeah, I just shoved a lot of games into here. I'm a dirty man. I'm gonna say they're cut from the same, they're one game split in twain. They're two games. But anyway, Danganronpa is really cool. It's the best way to describe it is Virtue's Last Reward plus Phoenix Wright plus ridiculous minigames, like logic snowboarding and playing hangman in the middle of a murder trial. Pretty weird, but it's really good. It's basically a bunch of kids are in a high school, and they have to kill each other and not get caught, and they can escape, and there's a demented teddy bear, and I think my favorite thing about the game is just that it manages to strike a cool tone between kind of lighthearted and goofy but also like deadly serious, and it kind of swings back and forth kind of at the drop of a hat, and I think it worked for me. I think Griffin may say, I think it's on his list too, he may say he wasn't as enthralled with some of the plot elements, but I was kind of along for the ride, and some of the emotional things, you know, they landed pretty well for me, and I got into it, and I felt for these people who were in this awful situation. So that's pretty cool. But at the same time, I laughed at stuff. So great balance, really fun visual novel, cool trials, a lot of really insane solutions. Highly recommended. Next for me is Monument Valley, and I think Jamie pretty much said all the good stuff about Monument Valley. Looks awesome, plays awesome. It's basically like Echo Chrome. It's Echo Chrome, except less fiddly and awful. And prettier. And
can I
actually
play it in PlayStation in home? PlayStation Home.
No, sadly you cannot. You can only play it on the iPad. But also and on Android devices, which I know you love, Griffin. It also has some really cool emotional beats. You know, just kind of subtle stuff, but it's really pulled off nicely. I didn't play the expansion like Jamie, but the base game, while short, is really great. It is best iPad game of the year.
And your yellow friend comes back in the expansion levels.
Oh my god, I thought he was dead.
Think again.
He's gonna die again.
I won't tell you.
Well, anyway, yeah, it's really awesome. And it is one of those games. There are not that many games out there that give me faith in the App Store, just like Jamie, but it is one of them. So yeah, that's gotta be on there. I put Shovel Knight next. Everything Jamie said about it is right. Shovel is the best platforming weapon in a long time, I think. The one thing I will say about it that I think made it fall lower on the list for me is I didn't think the difficulty was where it ought to have been. I think it was kind of, it was a weird curve. Some of the levels were really tough and some of them were really easy. And that kind of detracted from me in a game where I feel like the difficulty kind of takes center stage. Just because, you know, it's
gotcha.
That's kind of half the fun. And I would have liked a little more balanced curve. I think also some of the level design was a little lacking. I don't know. But it was pretty great. And also the music, while I really liked it, didn't stick with me as much as like Mega Man music. But it's still really great. Next for me is Tropical Freeze. Once again, I echo most of Jamie's sentiments. I did not like the game that came before it by Retro, Donkey Kong Country Returns. I just thought it was just a hard platformer that wasn't very fun. This one, they actually were like, hey, let's push the creativity button. And the first like half of the game is the most stupid fun you'll have in a 2D platformer. Like it's just, it's really creative. It's really interesting. Cool stuff happening on the screen, cool mechanical things happening. And then second half of the game, it kind of lags a little bit. I played the whole thing with my wife and we're just kind of like
bye-bye.
Pushing through those.
Bye-bye.
Oh, did I say something weird?
No.
Okay.
Congratulations. We're being weird. Congratulations.
Thank you. I played the whole thing with my wife and
my wife.
Is this a reference I don't know?
How do you not know this reference?
I don't know the reference.
Don't worry about the reference. Just bask in it.
Anyway, you'll have to tell me later.
Oh my.
I think maybe
you get it now? You're on board?
I don't know. I don't. I thought I did, but I don't. The only thing I can think of is that movie where Michelle Pfeiffer goes, I think she's starting to suspect something. But I don't know what you're talking about.
You're so far off base, it's amazing.
I know. Anyway, play the whole thing with her. We are at like the last level, and it's just not as fun as it was.
Yep.
We played two levels, and we're like, oh my God, this has just been a slog.
Someone really, I mean, I can't imagine like a child playing some of those bosses and some of those end levels.
Oh God,
they are torture.
They made up for how dumb the bosses in the first game were by just making them like 10-minute long fights. It's like, what are you doing? I don't have this kind of time to just fight a boss and have the tension up the whole time.
10-minute anyway. Long fights that you will lose in the 9th minute 50 times.
Yep, the first 8 minutes are really easy and the 9th minute gets balls hard.
Mm. Yeah.
That's why it's not higher on that list. Last thing on there, though, I'll give you the spotlight, Griff. Dark Souls 2. I was a little reluctant to put it on here, and I really do think if you guys want to call me on putting too many games on my list, you can cut it off. It is... Okay, Dark Souls is like one of my favorite games from the last generation. Dark Souls 2, pretty awesome sequel. Does a lot of the same things that Dark Souls 1 did right. Really awesome feeling of like exploration and discovery, great difficulty, you know, that isolation and tension that you usually feel in like a Metroid or something else. Really awesome. I feel like it's not as good though as the first game. I think the level design is a lot less inspired. You don't have that hub world that's all connected to everything else. You have an area where like four linear paths go out of to the end of the linear path. That kind of sucked. I think you also, the enemy design was kind of all over the place. I feel like they would more often than not use numbers rather than actually difficult attacking patterns to ramp up the difficulty. And it was like more cheesable, I think, and also just not as satisfying. And just the design in general was not quite up to snuff. I mean, there was some awesome stuff in there, but it just didn't match the creativity of the first game, I think. And I think that can pretty much come down to the original director not being attached. But it still was an amazing game, and given that he wasn't involved in the project, you know, they're pretty decent stewards for the franchise. So, but that Bloodborne though, that's gonna be pretty great. And that's my list.
And that's the list.
Nice. Take it home, Griffin.
Okay, thanks. I will. I'm taking it home. So we already did number one. That was Wolfenstein. Number two on my list. That's the order, right? So number two is South Park: The Stick of Truth. Where to begin with this? So, you know how you guys really liked that RPG that came out this year that was really long and plotting and uninteresting for the most part? South Park is pretty much the opposite of that. South Park appealed to me so greatly because it's that thing that me as an adult man who has played video games his entire life and now is like, I really like JRPGs. You know, it'd be great, a game where I don't have to grind for 35 hours or trifle in inane bullcrap for that amount of time. This strips out South Park, The Stick of Truth, strips out so much of that nonsense. You are going on quests, but it is, or like side quests, but it is very driven and very, I guess, like full of momentum where you're not getting deviated too much. There is the option to go and engage in side activities and additional things, but it is very refined. Also, what makes it extremely nice is it's kind of like coming back home. You know, it's like South Park. You know, there's aliens and there's hobos and there's all the favorite things about South Park that you may not be like a hardcore fan about, but you're like, oh, I remember catching a bit of that episode, or that's Terrence and Phillip. Canada's weird, that sort of thing. It has a lot of touchstones in South Park humor, and it's all voiced really well, and there's no glitches, and the game doesn't break. And
that's not true. There are glitches. Well, I had a glitch in like my 5 minute or my hour of play.
I guess.
Yeah,
I should,
they were widely reported on.
Okay, I should not say that it not having glitches is a thing that's good about it, because that's kind of playing the bar pretty low. But I didn't have any problems when I was playing it. I'll say that.
I played South Park and I turned out fine.
I think the humor was very much what you would expect from a South Park game, and like even more explicit than it probably had any right to be. It was genuinely funny. Again, very much in the South Park way. Like, these jokes are the jokes that you're going to be expecting. Like, lots of balls and dildos, lots of referential humor. You know, man, bear, pig, and all that stuff. Mechanically, like it was just so enjoyable to play a classic RPG that is pared down and not so bloated, but still embracing all those cool things about a JRPG, like collecting your party and engaging in multiple characters that have a diversity of options that you're building your team with. Okay, I'm getting too long in the tooth with this, but South Park, it was kind of tied with my first choice, so that I'm just spending a little time on that one. South Park was excellent and very much the best RPG that you can play as an adult person with limited time. Number three for me was Transistor. From your friends and mine at Supergiant Games. Once again, a very ambient and beautifully realized world with an interesting mechanic. This time, opposed to Bastion, it's a little more methodical. You're engaging a little more in strategy in your battles and less like a secret of whatever gung-ho. What also comes along with that, though, is kind of a different vibe to the game. Like, it doesn't quite feel as blundering. It feels a lot more thoughtful and mechanical and intelligent in all of its, not only mechanics, well, I guess that's kind of redundant, but like in what the game is trying to show you through its mechanics and also through the world it's creating. It just does such a good job with a very, very nuanced exposition and storytelling and music. Everybody loves music.
Fuck music. I hate headphones.
Griffin, when you said thoughtful, I thought you said fuckful.
Fuckful.
Yeah, and I was like, I'm on.
Well,
I'm
speaking
all
of fuckful, The Wolf Among Us is not with that. And that, Jamie, you convinced me to play this game. And I did.
Yeah.
I burned through all of the episodes on the iPad, and I was kind of doubting it at first because, you know, I had my fill with Walking Dead with it. You know, choosy your own adventure stuff. But Wolf Among Us like really brought me back into believing that these games can be good. Not only just because, hey, it's not Walking Dead anymore, which really is nice for me. And it's Fables, which is a franchise I do enjoy. But not having you living in a world where you're with like a human society and playing as kind of the blank slate is really nice. Like, you're playing as a character. You're playing in a more fantastical world that doesn't have like the frustrations of being in a real world. You're just like, just tell him he got bit. Come on. Like, why can't I have that option? It feels more, because of its limited scope, it feels like a more intelligently designed game. It was a murder mystery, which always sits well for me on my lists. It had, again, some pretty freaking rad music.
Yes.
Let's see here. Number five, Destiny.
Yeah,
there we go. That's what I was hoping
for.
What
are you doing?
Have you gone insane?
No, I don't think so, because
he was just farming that loot cave stairs.
I am the loot cave.
Went to a fever dream.
I am the walrus. Destiny is on this list because it's a good game, and I think that it's wrong to deny it that status. I played the alpha. It was fun. I played the beta. It was fun. I bought the full game.
What are you doing?
And I played through that, and it was fun.
You're drunk with power.
It was just a real nice first-person shooter. Like, it was. It technically very, very good. Like, it had that loot hook. It had a cool sci-fi vibe.
Are you fucking trolling us right now?
How was it?
You're talking about it is like, I feel like someone has a gun to your head.
Right now. I'm blinking. Can you feel me? I'm blinking. Oh God!
Wait, how is it better than Borderlands? Help me understand.
Borderlands isn't on this list and doesn't deserve comparison, so I'm not entirely certain. We can talk about that at a later date, maybe.
I just don't understand what that game brings to the table.
Not a whole lot, despite just real solid and crisp shooter mechanics. And that was kind of what did it for me. And, you know, I don't think that it deserves... I think that it deserves to be recognized because it is a very well-designed game mechanically, though it does have an overwhelmingly large amount of flaws that detract from it. Nonetheless, I still found myself wanting to play that game more and more and more. So,
well, addiction is worth something.
Yeah, it's kind of the same way that you feel about like the Nintendo games, where you can just jump online and kind of zone out and talk with people or do what you want to do, which is what we did when we were playing the beta.
Can I just say that Griffin went to Arizona, and then he came back,
and then Destiny was on his list.
Yeah.
It can't just. There must be a connection.
The lizard people in there are in Arizona.
I think the wizards left the moon and then they went to Arizona.
Anyway, speaking of games you can just play thoughtlessly or thoughtfully, the next one on my list is Mario Kart 8. Jeff, for the same reasons as you had enumerated, it's a good game. Like, it's technically really great. It brought me back into kind of enjoying Mario Kart in a way that I fell off for the last two games, at least. I guess the most enjoyable part of it was just, you know, going online, playing with friends, and like you had also said, you know, the unlocks kept that nice hook going where you're like, I gotta get new tires, gotta get those new tires. unlocking the characters, it was all really good. You know, nothing fantastic about it, but just all around done really well.
Koopalings.
What are you talking about?
Koopalings.
Koopalings, yeah. That's the number. That's top one bullet point.
Marquee feature.
And then also, Dark Souls 2 is on this list for, a continuing trend here. Kind of the zeitgeist feel for that. I think, as Jeff, you said, it is inferior to Dark Souls, the original, its predecessor. And those flaws are pretty glaring, you know. Less interesting design on the whole. Strategic combat puzzles. But I think it's a little bit more approachable, on the other hand. And I just had a real gosh darn great time playing it, and I would have given up had it not been for like playing alongside you guys and having that like oomph to keep me going through it so we could like have talks, which I think really means a lot in Game of the Year discussions. Conversely, number 8 on my list is Call of Duty Advanced Wars. If you didn't like Call of Duty now, you're probably not going to like it. Again, pacing being a theme this year, I think Call of Duty Advanced Wars is does something that, you know, first-person shooters, especially Call of Duty games, fail consistently over and over again, which is they did a really good job of keeping the action at an ebb and flow and designing well-thought-out levels that have different flavor. You have, like, stealth moments. You have quiet moments. You have things where you're just kind of meandering around a location. Very interesting, like, concept. And a cool diversity of environments. You know, future warfare is always cool to me.
Angry specs.
And yes. Thank you for your internet meme interjection.
Wait, so sorry, are you just doing single player analysis? Because you do.
Well, I was just about to say that going online was pretty fun. Once again, you know, I'm not a seasoned veteran or really drive a lot of pleasure about from shooting dudes online, but I did play a little bit and I had a good time.
Casual scum.
The mobility that they put into this game with the exosuit is kind of game changing and design changing. When you play that and you're able to dash around and move through the environment in ways that you're typically not able to in FPS, and then you take it away, it really makes you hanker for that extra little boost here and there to kind of change the momentum of the battle or just a single one-on-one interaction. So I think that was done extremely well and is going to play in the future of first-person shooters with that mechanic.
Your inclusion of that on the list kind of invites the Titanfall comparison.
Definitely. And maybe that's something we can talk about when we talk about first-person shooter games. Because, yes, as you
it's
stated,
the room.
Titanfall is not on my list.
Yeah.
I should also say that Call of Duty Advanced Warfare had a good story. It wasn't top notch, but it was pretty enjoyable.
Titanfall story, not picture.
Yep. So that's why that one's not on there. That's a bunch of hot trash. Number 9, Infamous Second Son for me. Like the Infamous series, I thought it was a really fun game. Did some things interesting mechanically, not just in terms of like a game mechanic, but with controller, smart PlayStation 4. Choices on that. Not a totally obnoxious cast of characters in a game about superheroes. Absolutely great art design, gorgeous looking game. Just a whole hell of a lot of fun to pick up and play and run around a world and collect crap in. Number 10, I threw on here Danganronpa Trigger Happy Havoc. Jeff, as you had said earlier, it's very much off the heels of like a VLR experience for me. I think that you enjoyed more of the human interest portion of the gameplay, and I enjoyed the more technical side of it. Like I really liked the courtroom battles. I really enjoyed how they gave so much variation in each one of those things, where it could have just been one note, but they kind of had like multiple events within each trial, which kept them very exciting, very fresh, and then coming off VLR, it's also, you know, hey, you can probably do more with a very well designed comic book gamey thing. What is that? Visual novel.
Yeah.
So that's my 10. You guys,
solid.
Can I say one thing, Griff, about Danganronpa?
Yeah.
If you like the mechanical parts, you should play the sequel, because the trials are super beefed up there and really crazy. So that's
what if I don't like the human parts?
They're present.
Yeah.
The trials are really cool, though. Okay. They're really weird and really cool.
All right.
So maybe I'll lend it to you at some point.
Okay.
Except I think I downloaded it. So never mind. No, I own it.
Send me
your
Vita.
I own the cartridge.
Send me your Vita.
Like greasy Cheetos all over it.
Well, guys, that brings us to the end of everybody's personal Game of the Year lists. We are approaching the 1 hour mark fast. So I think that it might be worthwhile kind of chopping it down to what you think the Game of the Year for this year is. Maybe you don't need just to say, maybe it's just say one and we'll put it on this. I think that both you guys have Dragon Age on your list, so we
Destiny
probably coming out on top.
You say step it up, step it up for
Amiibos.
Coming out on top, which is it's the gay dating sim, it just came out.
Oh,
still
right.
2014. Real penis.
I mean, it's a game, I think, GameStop pre-order.
Yeah, I think Jamie and I would both say Dragon Age should be a contender.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
I put Destiny on this list only so that I can take it away immediately. So
that's, yeah, do that.
Yeah. So, you know, all I wanted to do is say, hey, I think that when we played it together through the betas, it was a lot of fun. And though you guys will probably not admit to it, I think that it was just a great game to be dicking around online in.
That was fun. I had a good time.
Yeah,
it's cool when developers know exactly what makes the little dopamine squirt happen.
Yeah.
Jamie, can you talk about that with all games? Just make a sarcastic remark.
Just again. Dopamine?
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool when developers just activate the receptors in your brain. They build
yeah.
the ones and make
yeah, it's cool when you think you're having quote-unquote fun with a video game.
But you're just at a Skinner box pulling that handle. Wake up, yeah. You're in Vegas, MRF-er.
You're just a brain in a box. You don't even know if you're real.
Solipsism.
Solid state.
Super baby. Anyway. Mario Kart Smash, throw those on. Yes, no? Anyone?
Yes.
I think you can put those on, but I'll be happier if they're separate games.
Yeah, put them on a separate game.
Them on super smash.
I mean you gotta put Wolfenstein on there.
Lose.
Yeah, I think Wolfenstein deserves to be on there. I think that South Park deserves to be on there, but I don't think that that's gonna be just me telling you guys it was really good again.
See, I played an hour of it and therefore I'm an expert on it, so I think it should be on there. Probably
you finished the half the game, I think.
I'm sad that it's not on there because the hour that I played was great. I was having a really good time. I would love to be able to weigh in on it more.
Is Tomb Raider on there?
Yeah, Tomb Raider's on there. Tomb Raider's always on there, Jamie.
You mean the one that
don't
just came
you worry.
Out?
Don't you worry, baby. It's always on there.
Did you watch the trailer for that game, Jamie? It's hilarious.
What game?
For the Tomb Raider Inferno Town Osiris Land.
What?
The Tomb Raider and the Broken Bra Strap.
Oh,
the Temple of Osiris.
I was actually referring to the reboot, but no, I've played.
Didn't that come out in 2012?
Came out a couple years ago.
2012.
Yep.
Yeah, put it on there.
It's on there. Don't you worry. It's on
there. Okay. Temple of Osiris is a good game, you guys.
All right.
I believe it. It's not
Game of the Year material, but it's a good game.
It's bathroom material, if you know what I'm saying.
Is Had a Full Boyfriend on there?
I'm waiting for the PS4 release.
Okay.
what just got bumps from here? Something. Oh, Transistor. You had that and you got rid of it. Same reason or what?
Same reason as South Park, because, you know, now that you guys played it, so, I mean...
Well, no,
Jamie
played it. I love Transistor, but I don't think... I would not put it in my personal top games of the year, but I would not begrudge you for saying that it belongs there. I just didn't have... I didn't have as much of a deep connection with it.
What about Wolf Among Us, guys?
What?
I don't think that game is Game of the Year material contender. I think it was a super cool game, but it didn't do enough different or interesting or... I mean, it did interesting, but I don't think that it separates itself from that like Telltale pedigree enough to really merit being Game of the Year of this year against some of the other big heavy hitters this year that were maybe more impactful or more unique than a game like Wolf Among Us.
Interesting.
Yeah, Wolf Among Us should maybe be on there, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Wait, so Griffin was like, just finished with the reason of why it shouldn't, and then Jamie half-heartedly said it should be on there.
Oh, I thought he was saying it shouldn't. I'm fine with it not being on there.
Okay.
I mean, I thought he said he should. It should.
That was great. I'm going to ask...
Two ships passing in the night.
I'm going to ask some stuff that we all put down on our list. Shuttle Knight.
Should yeah, that get there? That on.
I didn't put
get
that on my there. List.
Put it on there.
Okay, we'll put it on there. It may be removed.
Put it on there.
We'll put it on there. You slow down a little. Monument Valley? Yes, no, maybe so?
Yes.
Okay. I'm personally not sure if it's...
You haven't even played the full game. Okay, by Griffin's criteria, you cannot talk about it.
Is DLC considered full games?
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
That's why Mass Effect 2 is the greatest game ever, because it's still going on because the release of DLC 4.
You have to read all the books if you want
to. It's the only way to understand.
To explore all the romance options.
If you don't get off the Normandy, then you're not really playing it.
Let's see. We don't have a lot of other shared material, really.
No, well, we really don't.
Can I just go ahead and say that this year was kind of weird?
It was a super weird year.
But I don't know, and Dragon Age, I think they're two great games. I mean, it wasn't the best year. Expectations were high because of new consoles, but I don't hate this year as much as everyone else.
I don't hate this year either. I've had a lot of fun. It's weird to get to the end and look at your list and be like, wow, there's really only 10 things on here that I even think about.
Yeah. I had a hard time looking at my list and saying like, okay, here are the games that I completed from start to finish, or it at least, you know, it's an uncompletable kind of game like Mario Kart.
Or Dragon Age.
No.
Can't be completed.
That's not true. and then saying like, man, like I can't believe that I only got through these many things this year. But yeah. On the other hand, like, they're all good games. Like, I kind of suffered from the same issue that I did, I think, last year, where I was like, I don't really know the order or feel great about what order they're in. Like, it didn't just snap into place like it has before.
Yeah.
Game of 2015. Don't spoil it now, Griffin.
Oh, shoot. I got ahead of myself.
All right, go ahead.
Oh, you're
saying you don't know about the order, Griff? Like, what order stuff should be in?
Yes. Yeah, it didn't make sense like it did before.
Hmm. Yeah, I suppose so. Did you feel the same way, Jamie?
Sure. No, I did.
I think that Jamie's secret 11 is a telltale sign of not getting them snapping right into a tight 10 order.
Well, I kind of had, like, 13.
And there were games in this year that I kind of wanted to put onto my list, even though they were objectively terrible because they did certain things so well, like Alien Isolation. Mm-hmm. Like, I had half a mind to slap it on there and argue that, like, its production values make it worth trying, but I, in the end, could not sustain that.
Yeah. I just feel like,
I'm surprised, Jamie, you didn't incorporate Titanfall, since you were like the biggest drum beater of that game when it came out.
I really like Titanfall, but as you know, I've dipped into it a couple times recently, and the game's completely dead. They made some changes to it that I think made it less fun. They nerfed the automatic rifle, and there are little things like that, little changes, things with the jumping. Some levels changed a little bit. None of the changes seem to be for the better. So that's the reason why I really didn't make my list.
Okay.
Alrighty then. Very interesting. So even with the stuff that we're not sure should be on this list, we only have 6 games.
That's okay. All we need is 5 and 1.
5 and 1.
Well, we need the one to win, and then the four to follow up and carry its little trail.
How about we just combine one of those or two of those games together into one game?
How about that's the worst idea ever? Okay, yeah, sure. Let's do that. Let's actually just put Nintendo as Game of the Year this year, and then be done with it all. Yeah. Would that make you happy?
The Amiibo is the Game of the Year.
secret Game of the Year. Amiibo hunting.
It's the alternate reality Game of the Year.
It's true. Yeah, I'm in. Speaking of dopamine responses, there you go. That Captain Falcon booty.
Yes. Did you get him?
Me? No.
Oh.
I've been working. we got to cut something here because we're one heavy, and this lifeboat can only hold four shambling corpses, which are games of the year of 2014.
Probably Shovel Knight or Monument. Which one? David, which one do you think?
Which one is not in the top five? Shovel Knight.
Yeah, I'm with you. Cut it. It's dying.
Great. I support that. Having not played Monument and Valley, but having played Shovel Knight, you know, Jeff, I think I agree with you and your sentiments where it does some things really well. It does other things not so great, but it's really cool for being a Kickstarter project and just making some like really awesome game design choices. But then on the other hand, you know, not having that NES nostalgia, it kind of was a little hollow for me.
And it inspired me to make one of my PS4 controllers Shovel Knight colors with spray paint that I bought at Michael's.
Back on the list.
Can we put Jamie's blue and gold PS4 controller as Game of the Year?
Why don't we put that as Jamie's 12th secret game zero of the year for Jamie?
The zeroth door.
All right, so that leaves us with, I think, a good five. I think an interesting five. Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty much between, I guess, well, we chose Dragon Age and Wolfenstein. Are there any others that you guys feel like despite those choices, should be higher in with the general public, I guess? Or something? Because this is like a list for the people, not a list for us.
Well, you're saying like objectively the best game this year. Well,
yeah.
Then I think we throw a lot of this garbage out here. Like... Like those last two, we just throw away if we want to be practical about it.
Oh.
Whoa.
Like, insane. I mean, you already have two games there for Super Smash Bros. You're not even signifying which Super Smash Bros. Was the best.
I'll put the fucking Wii right.
Yes.
Perfect.
You did see Ben Affleck's penis, I heard.
No, you don't.
No,
you
just
don't?
Like Far Cry 4.
No, they talk up
with Nick.
No, I did not see his penis. You see Neil Patrick Harris's penis.
Oh,
even better.
Yeah, and it's covered in blood.
Oh my. Now I'm really aroused.
Yeah, go see that movie.
I mean,
So, are we gonna? Is it gonna be down between Wolfenstein and Dragon Age?
I think that's kind of what the debate is. As for actual good game of best game of the game of 2014, which is better than all other games.
So Jeff didn't play Wolfenstein, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Okay,
and
so
it sucks.
I think that. So I'll just quickly say why I think Dragon Age should come on top of Wolfenstein, but only slightly. Okay. And the reason is, and I completely agree with you, Griff, that Wolfenstein is the best thing that has happened to shooters in a long time. Mm. Whoa, that was not me.
It won't be in it. I remember now.
I think that while Wolfenstein completely rejuvenated a genre and took it in a brand new direction that I hope other companies can replicate, but I doubt they will. I feel like Dragon Age like fulfills the promise of a genre for me that has existed since I
this
started
is not about
in
you.
I feel like it fulfills the promise of a genre for fans of RPGs who want
buggy ass
combination
games.
Who want a combination of the characters that we saw in RPGs, JRPGs of old, and the mechanics and freedom of games like Skyrim. It to me is like the only game that has those two things, and it's almost like an East meets West. Wow, I can't talk. Kind of thing, in that I am as emotionally drawn, vested in these characters, even the main one. And to me, can I just take a step back and say, it is incredible that they injected so much character into someone whose voice and like visage and race you decide. Because I felt in Mass Effect, and I loved all the Mass Effect games, and I don't think Shepard is a bad character, but Shepard's kind of a blank slate. I feel like your character in this game, even with the decisions that you have before you, is likable and unique. And I've watched people play the game on YouTube who make different decisions than I am because I'm crazy and I want to see what the other side is. And even people who make completely different choices than I, your main character maintains like a sense of self and an individuality. And I really haven't seen that before, especially like in Skyrim, like you're essentially nobody. This game is like as big as Skyrim. And it allows you to make the same choices.
Can you get into specifics here and tell me who you are that you are so fondly proud of as being a character in this game?
You mean like how I rolled?
No, not your own projection of the character you're playing, but you're saying like this is a real character in a game that you're able to actually notice in many different playthroughs.
Can I jump in for just a quick second and just make a small amendment to what you said, Jamie, which I think maybe would help with Griff? I think what he's saying is you do roll something when you start, like you roll a race and you roll a class, but then the game is like, here is your story, and it kind of makes, once you've chosen those initial variables, like there is stuff that exists outside of you that is part of this character that you don't really fully control, that you kind of feel like you're watching.
Like
Does that
what?
Make sense?
No. Can you speak in specifics?
Well, we're both elves, right, Jamie?
Yeah, but I think I know what Griffin
Oh, I
wants.
See. So you guys are both elves. So
Let me share the experience. Griffin is doing that thing where he's prejudged it, and he has a very specific answer he wants, and I actually think I can give him
Perfect.
At least close to that answer. So in this game, no matter what race you roll, no matter what choices you make, you are a reluctant hero who is begrudgingly and warily accepting the task of essentially like bringing the world back together. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if you play someone who is an asshole. It doesn't matter if you play the Paragon. It doesn't matter what race you are. And it doesn't matter who you choose to align or who you chose to surround yourself with. You are constantly in awe of the people around you, and you are constantly like wary of the people around you.
Me
and
as
wary
a, you,
of the
you
responsibilities.
As in the character, or you as the player.
You as in the character.
Okay.
You as the character are kind of a reluctant. You are shoved into a role that the world needs, but you are not entirely sure that you yourself can fulfill.
You are super.
And I. Essentially. But the thing is you're not because you realize
But you're actually Clark Kent.
You realize halfway through the game that like what people it's very true. It's like Batman. It's like a superhero game kind of. You realize halfway through the game that people need a symbol and like you're going to be that symbol.
Now is this so me as in the character or the player now?
He's saying the character still.
Okay.
Everything I'm saying is for the character because that's the answer to your ridiculous question that I thought you wanted. So now I'm talking just to the character, not to the choices that you make as a player. So that's what I'm saying is so astounding. Even in the face of all of these choices you have to make, there is a core character there that is well written and coherent, and I think that's really cool.
That is interesting.
I don't have anything to say. You made a good case for him actually being or her being in character.
Yeah.
I just noticed, and I thought this is where what you were trying to say earlier, Jamie, that even when I like rolled something, I found the character like developing in ways that I didn't fully anticipate, which is a different point. But I think that like this speaks to kind of the idea that you don't feel like you control every little like every little moment of the game. Like it just feels like there's something, and maybe this is kind of something that you overtly witness when you watch different playthroughs, Jamie. It just feels like there is a thing that you don't totally control about your character. And it's the rare game where I am like the dude in the middle who's, I guess, living the power fantasy, which I kind of hate. But at the same time, I almost feel like an outsider watching that character. Like it's that game where the rare game where I actually don't feel like I'm just watching that thing I made doing the things I tell it to do. I'm like watching a character.
Jeff, could that be partially because the options that are given to you aren't as robust and corresponding to the things you actually want to do in the game? Like you,
no,
you
never,
find
I
yourself having to play a character because the choices that you want to make aren't available, or at least not interesting?
I don't know. I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case. I mean, I feel like I'm making choices about how to be, but I actually kind of like the idea of the character having something that is not entirely me. So I don't know. I mean, it depends on what you want from an RPG, and maybe what this tells us is that the choices don't matter as much. I mean, you could take any positive and spin it into a negative that way. You know what I mean? Like you could there's no core character, in which case your choices might matter more, or there is a core character, mm-hmm, in which case your choices matter less.
Right. But it definitely feels like neither are the case. So it's kind of in that same gray realm of it doesn't do either well.
I can tell you for sure that as someone who's played and loved all three Mass Effect games, that this gives you infinitely more control over the direction of the story. Mm. It may not be as much as something like a Skyrim, mm-hmm, but you definitely, even very early on, you have a choice to take the story in two very different directions that will impact your world and give you access to characters. They're not playing characters, but impact the world in completely different ways. Mm-hmm. And Mass Effect really didn't have anything akin to that. Mass Effect 3, actually, let me amend that a little bit. I'd say Mass Effect 3 had some decisions like this. But I would say more decisions in this game approximate like the weight of those decisions, at least in my mind.
Oh, I don't know if I agree with that one bit, Jamie. I mean, Mass Effect 1, you had major moments like death of a playable character in the end game. You have very, very critical like A or B moments in that game where you choose to exterminate or let live races. And that carries into the second game and then into the third game, though maybe not realized quite as well as we had all loved. I think that's not true. Those games did
no,
have
I was
a
saying
lot of
that,
major things happening.
Sure, but I guess Mass Effect 1 just isn't as fresh in my mind. When I was thinking of specific decisions that like are analogous, I was thinking of in 3 when you decide whether the like... I don't even remember her name. She wears the mask all the time.
Tali.
Tali, when you decide whether Tali's race should live or die or whether the robot's race should live or die.
Yeah.
There's a decision that's kind of like that. It's more about who you ally with, but it's pretty early on in the game. And I like that. I'm not saying that Mass Effect doesn't have those decisions. I'm saying that this game seems to give them to you earlier on. And when it does give them to you, it's not because I can't recall Mass Effect 1 that well, but in Mass Effect 3, I do recall that decision with Tali kind of being almost ridiculously facile and binary. Just like, which one do you want? The robots or the ladies?
See, okay. I'm going to go ahead and jump in and say that I think that when those decision points come up in Dragon Age, they're pretty direct. Like, if you do this, these will be the consequences. If you do this, these will be the consequences. And
well, I guess the consequences are less, because when you do that mission in Dragon Age, it's not like the mages will die or the Templars will die. The outcome is you will forge this alliance and there will be unforeseen things that will play out through the game. And if you choose the mages, they're going to bitch about the Templars constantly in ways that you might not predict. Whereas in Mass Effect, it's literally like, oh, Tali's face is all dead. She's
yeah,
sad.
Well, I would say that what gets me with this and what I didn't really feel in what I played of the other games was it feels like the veil is not drawn back as much. So while it's not clear to me, like, Griffin, you're asking a lot about, like, how much player agency do you have? How much does your character stand alone?
I'm bringing that up specifically because Jamie is bringing up the character of your agency
in the Inquisitor. But I think it kind of raises an interesting point, which is that I don't really, it never really was like a thing that got in the way for me. And it always did in other things that I tried like this. Like I didn't have to think about whether or not I was rolling, whether or not like I controlled things, because it, for whatever reason, when you did make choices, it just something about the way that it integrates into the story, the lack of obvious indicators, whether you're being Paragon or Renegade, maybe I don't know exactly what it is, but something about it for me kept me more engrossed in the world, kept me more involved with the character, like it made it possible for me to give any personality to this character beyond what I threw into it myself, because I think the illusion was preserved by the lack of obvious, like, hit you over the head, now you're nicer, now you're meaner.
See, and that was one of the things that Jeff, I know you had mentioned that when you were talking about the game before, but that was something that I noticed immediately when I was playing this game, and that's I just have the exact opposite reaction. When you're not given any indicator of what it is, I feel like there is no repercussions to being completely schizophrenic. Like, the game is, you can ask a question in any way you want, and because you can do that, there's no, I mean, unless you're living your own, like, a character story or your own, like, role-playing experience as this like, rogue or this paragon or whatever, what have you, there's no reason to do one line of questioning versus the other. And then conversely, none of them are really delivered in an interesting way like they were in previous BioWare games, such that I would want to keep playing in one direction to achieve new and more powerful degree of that line of questioning or behavior.
I guess for me,
I think that's a triumph. Like, it's a triumph that you don't just rack up.
Gone home, screwed over the game industry.
Like, it's a triumph that you don't rack up bad person points and then you have scars on your face, because that to me is way too simple. You can as you play through the game be a certain way,
yeah,
but that I like the fact that sometimes these choices are hard and there are gray areas,
but there's nothing hard about it because it doesn't make any difference.
I would say that it's kind of the Walking Dead problem all over again. It's these choices where you're not being told exactly what the consequences are. And I think it's kind of ungamey, because it's like a game that refuses to expose its systems to you, which kind of encourages you to role play more, I feel like.
But didn't you say that there's also moments in the game where it's like completely binary and then also outlining this is exactly what's going to happen?
Yes,
when you make, so,
few,
so
are,
the veil is like all the way up. Yeah, no,
but see, for me, those moments actually, Griffin, for me, were not my favorite moments. The moments when the veil is lifted, I mean, some of them land a little better than others, but I actually wasn't crazy about those. And those are few and far between. But yeah, it'll be like, are you going to ally with these guys or these guys? Choose the side of the wheel. And that's a part of every BioWare game, but that, those actually didn't quite do it for me as much. I was more into the kind of subtle role playing where, like, I don't really know what to say here. And the one cool thing is, like, you'll be talking to your companions and this kind of stuff comes up and you kind of know them. But it feels more like real life, because, like, you kind of know your companions, but you kind of don't.
Yeah.
And you just say something and you see how you feel about it. And it's like, sometimes it's not going to do as well as it did. Like, sometimes they're not going to be crazy about what you said, but it's okay.
So
you will make everything. You can try and say the things that you think they want to hear, and unlike Mass Effect, sometimes they'll backfire, which I like. Like, you a character will be acting a certain way and will lead you to believe that if you say this thing, then they will like you more. When you say that thing, you learn some new piece of information about them, and it turns out that in this instance, they are not happy with what you said. That to me seems more real. I can totally understand how that might piss you off because you feel like almost cheated. But for me, it's just a more nuanced, interesting interaction, and it actually keeps me more engaged during these super long conversations.
Plus, you can still bone them anyway.
Yeah.
So that, I guess, is my question as well. Is Jamie, you kind of answered it there. With I noticed that when I was playing the game, interacting with people, saying my decisions, which in my opinion didn't really matter, except for gaining points, because I didn't really know what I was doing. When for some reason I would say something and then some person would be okay with me being a little more aggressive versus a little more passive. So when those points build, what comes of that? Is it unlocking new powers, unlocking new dialogue trees, or just is it just a bone option, or what is it?
I have no idea.
Loyalty quests, Griffin. Okay. You know, just new dialogue, new background. I mean, you'll get cutscenes with them. You'll get quests you can do with them.
Okay, and that's governed by their affection for you.
Pretty much, yeah. All right. And you know, look, I mean, at some point, it kind of gives way to, I think, what I understand happened in Mass Effect. I don't know because I didn't get far enough to really do a lot of that. But I like the way it feels more organic. I like the way that you might start off kind of doing poorly with that character, and then you get to know them a little better, and it works.
And one thing that the game does that Mass Effect didn't do for me personally is that I will set out and I will say to myself, okay, this guy is immediately interesting. I like this guy. Like, I'm going to get on this guy's good side and I'm going to say the things that I think he wants to hear. This happened with me with a character called Dorian, who's kind of like quirky and weird. And I was like immediately intrigued by him. But then you start talking to him. And he has some weird ass views that really pissed me off. Like, he's totally cool with slavery. And like, even though I wanted just to say what I thought he wanted to hear, when we started talking about how slavery is okay in Tevinter, which is where he comes from, I was just like, you know what? Fuck you, Dorian. I don't agree with you here. And that never happened in Mass Effect. I would never like got angry.
And did you tell him to go F himself and then you stopped interacting with him?
No, I told him.
You get an argument with them.
Yeah, I got an argument, like a long, interesting argument with him. And then afterwards, I still helped him reconcile himself with his dad, who kicked him out because he's gay.
Yep.
He's a cool character. I like Dorian.
Yep. Plus, transsexuals.
Yes.
How many of the Game of the Year contenders have transsexuals on them?
All right, I think we need to get to the real meat and potatoes discussion of Dragon Age Inquisition here. The game is not good because it does not put its best foot forward. And I think that in a day and age, not a Dragon Age, but a day and age where there are so many amazing pieces of medium out there and the media that you can experience, for something to say, hey, give me your first 15 hours and then I'll get good. Like, I am the slowest slow burn ever, but then you'll really enjoy me. I think that is poor design. That is not a good video game design. That is actually the antithesis of video game design.
I can't argue with you about that personally. I think it's a pretty serious flaw.
But it's still my number one. Like, nothing you said is untrue.
This is why it's so hard, because I have a hard time. I wish I played Wolfenstein so I could really truly compare. I feel like we only have Jamie, who's put in significant time on both.
I love them both. They're both. I would have it a tie if it were up to me. But I think because by that criteria, if that criteria appeals to you, Wolfenstein clearly has it, because from start to finish, it's just mind-blowingly awesome every single second. But that's not what I like. That's not my first and foremost concern when I play games. So for me, while you're exactly right, Griff, that doesn't mean that it's not like it doesn't edge out Wolfenstein as number one on its other merits. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Now, what if when you finish Dragon Age, it ends up ending like both previous Dragon Ages? In the last literal half hour of the game, it takes the pooch by the neck and screws it so hard that you lose any reverence you have for the game whatsoever, like it did in Dragon Age 1, like it did in Dragon Age 2.
Now,
does that happen in Dragon Age 3, Players of Dragon Age Inquisition?
Too bad. I don't know, because I didn't finish it, despite putting 70 hours into it.
Mm, okay. You guys played any of the previous Dragon Ages?
Nope.
I played some of one.
Played some of one. One's good. Good stuff.
Yeah, I love one.
I'm going to say this, though. Even if the ending throws a dumb choice at me, which has happened, I don't think it's going to ruin the rest of the game for me.
What it does is it totally upends the tea table on all the characters and motivations that existed previously in its well-thought-out world.
You can't take away the well thought out world before that from me.
Yeah, there's no way.
Oh,
I like the first half of I Am Legend. Argue that away.
Just because the last season of The X-Files was really bad doesn't mean it's not a classic.
Yeah.
All right.
Boom.
I mean, Boom. Listeners might understand my difficulties with the TV show Lost, and how the ending of that completely ruined everything for me. I don't think that there were certain parts that weren't enjoyable, but I think that as a whole, it is now mostly garbage.
But that's totally different, and I actually completely agree with you in regards to Lost, because Lost, like, the key draw for Lost is what's going on here. The key draw for this game is not what's going on here, and then you get told that they're in purgatory, and you're like, oh god damn it. The key draw of this game is the throwaway moments that may not even relate to the main story in any, you know, large way.
Yeah.
So even if it turns out that Corypheus is, you know, Madonna in drag, then I'm not going to care.
That would be the best ending ever.
Yeah, that would actually be awesome.
No, I actually agree. I think that I've already had enough of this. Like, I've already had great moments in this game that it can't take away from me by sucking later. It can suck later. You can definitely do that, but it can't take those moments away. And unlike Lost, where, like Jamie said, it's all about the suspense. It's all about, oh my god, what is going to happen next?
What's going on?
But then, what if that suspense at the end is just absolute garbage?
But I don't feel suspense.
Yeah, we're saying that.
You just said it's suspense. You said it was suspense.
No. We're saying Lost was suspense.
Yeah, Lost is all about the suspense. This game is not about the suspense. This game is like, hey, let's chill in our Skyhold and go talk to our friends and like, learn more about them and let's go on some missions and explore some worlds. And like, if at the end you do the thing and then it's bad, the worlds were still cool.
Yeah.
All right.
I
think that's terrible game design and just absolute lazy garbage, but all right.
Well, playing
an MMO is really fun at the low levels as well.
Let me put it this way, Griff. So what happens about 15 to 20 hours, depending on how fast you play, through the game is the entire reason why you are playing up until that point is almost, it's not necessarily undone, but it's changed, because up until a certain point, you're trying to find out why was this place blown up.
Yeah.
And then you find out why.
Okay.
And then the game completely changes. And that doesn't mean that the story, the core story elements in that first half, like 15 hours, are suddenly.
I mean, they were never terrible, but it doesn't redeem them, right?
Yeah. And it doesn't erase them. So it's like.
Okay. Well, I mean, okay. You taking Dragon Age 2 specifically, and I know this is probably not 100% pertinent because it's foolish to compare the previous game to its current game. But what I'm saying is, when you have a game where you say, here's the mages, here's the Templars, each represent a certain virtue and each have their flaw, very like you feel very much a connection to one or the other or both for good reasons. It is a well thought out religion and storyline and people that surround it. And then what literally the last interaction of that game is you choosing A or B because one of your characters did something that is completely against everything that they've represented in the game so far. And then that faction, which you may have allied or been against, or you know, whatever side you choose to be on, then 100% flips and says, hey, we were lying. Now it's a giant boss fight that's terrible, and it just completely just poops all over everything that they were trying to establish by making this an interesting and real world with viewpoints and depth, and then it just poops right all over that, and it says, here you go, here is the exact opposite of what you might want.
So as someone who's never played Mass Effect, they're therefore a complete expert, this kind of sounds like what people didn't like about Mass Effect 3. And I feel like, Jamie, you like Mass Effect 3?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I did like Mass Effect 3.
Do you know what I'm trying to say here, though? Same idea, no. Right? Is it kind of the same idea? You like the ending, too, though.
Yeah, I did like the ending of Mass Effect 3.
Damn it. You're supposed to not like it so we can make a point.
What point? I'll make your point.
The point
just
is,
tell me what the point is.
The point was supposed to be, if you don't like the ending of Mass Effect 3, the stuff before it can still be good.
Yes, I would. Well, that's completely true. I don't agree with what Griffin is saying. And actually, what Griffin was saying about the ending of that game, too, sounds kind of cool to me.
Okay. All right, buddy. You enjoy that one.
We're getting too speculative here. We're kind of coming off the rails. We're talking about the ending that none of us have seen and the ending that only one... We're having arguments about things that we don't know about.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But I've already said, if the ending were Madonna, fine.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way.
Don't care.
But you can't. I mean, then why should games have any endings at all? Like, we should all play MMOs and Destiny forever.
Well, it would be better if the ending was also good.
You're forgetting that my favorite game I've never beaten.
But that's not to the merit of that game. That's your own malfunctions.
Okay. Yeah, but that's still my favorite game of all time.
How about this? Okay. Some people really hate the ending of Evangelion. Okay.
Uh-huh.
But the stuff before that.
Are we bringing in other material again here?
That's what you did. The ending of something can be bad, but it doesn't have to ruin the stuff before it. And I think you can make it. I feel like
like you would have more of a leg to stand on if you guys had finished this game and say, hey, it was bad, but you know what? Everything else was still really good.
See, this is the problem. We haven't finished it.
It's true.
We're doing it now. What do we do?
You know why it's the problem? Because an 80-hour sprawling RPG that's mostly aimless is not that great of a game.
But it's been really fun.
Yeah, well, people love Skyrim as well. I mean, a big open world is awesome. But I think Dragon Age has ill design intentions right up front. It is mostly uninteresting to me. You guys say you did really enjoy meandering around in the side zone, but as a like mechanically as an RPG, was it great?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm very conflicted because, like I said, I wish I had assessed Wolfenstein as well. I mean, I have to take your word that it was a really mechanically tight game, and I'm hearing from both of you.
It wasn't I feel like Griffin is trying to make the point that I think Wolfenstein is flawless. And since you cannot tell me that you think this game, Dragon Age, is flawless, Wolfenstein is clearly the best game. Wolfenstein is not flawless.
Okay.
Wolfenstein's story
Let's talk about
is,
Wolfenstein.
Wolfenstein, you yourself said when we were discussing the game originally that it had plot holes that you initially couldn't reconcile. I actually disagreed with you because I think it's so ridiculous and comic booky that if there are giant plot holes, it's like whatever. I mean, you shove yourself inside of a missile and to sneak onto a U-boat filled with robot Nazis. So it's like, I don't really care.
Not the
about
first game that had you inside a giant missile.
That's a pretty good
giant.
Yeah. That keeps good company.
But it doesn't. But that game does have moments where it transcends that kind of comic bookiness. But I would say when it does that, it doesn't do it in a superb fashion. It just does it. And the fact that it does it is reason enough to hold it high and say this game is incredible and is doing things that other games that have similar types of stories aren't doing. But that said, when the game does try to get serious, like when you go to what do they call those internment camps for Jews? Concentration camps. When you go there, that section is great. I'm not going to argue that it's not great. I'm not going to say that, like, it was superb and made me think about like that era of history differently. And I'm not going to say that part of the game was filled with interesting characters that I'll remember for the rest of my life, because it wasn't. It was a cool part of a game that was unexpected, but it's not like I'm going to hold it head and shoulders above other games in terms of story.
Okay.
That's just where I'm coming from, though.
I think that it's very ballsy for a video game like a first-person shooter to take on topics such as internment camps and not paint them in a, hey, mow down this hallway full of dudes sort of way, but actually have pacing and have gravitas and kind of just putrid disgust It was very intense. And there are other moments in that game as well, such as, and not all of them were delivered through gameplay. There were some interesting cutscenes that showcased moments like that. Maybe not quite as heavy, but you have.
And those moments are hallways. They're essentially slightly interactive cutscenes. They're great, but they're not like revolutionary.
Hallway nerd style.
When you're delivering the food on the tray, or any time that you're interacting with that character, that blonde woman. Like, I can't remember a single time that I was interacting with that character, even though she was fabulous and the story segments that include her are great. Mm-hmm. Everything in that felt like a Call of Duty style, like, follow and be interacted with, as opposed to interact.
But
I think say those moments weren't great.
There were other moments that did do the non-linear well. You have moments where it is like the come this way, run down this hallway, shoot these guys, and it is interesting. And then you have moments like that interaction with the crazy tarot card reading Nazi blonde woman that also don't fit that bill. And then you have other moments like the internment camp or the base where you're just, you know, milling about and just doing weird side missions that kind of feel, you know, bizarrely out of place in a first-person shooter, or a section of the game where you don't get a gun for an extremely long time, or you're just taking a tour through a moon base.
Yeah, but those were still kind of be interacted with moments, and I'm going to do the Griffin thing now and say, hey, be specific. Can you specifically point out specific times where you specifically felt like you were specifically interacting with other people as opposed to walking through a cutscene?
I think there's the base, which I think I brought up before. There are the bevy of characters, which you are mm-hmm. you're speaking with. I mean, you may not be like arm wrestling or doing something more complex, but they are presenting to you their backstory. And then you are doing things beyond that too. Whereas in the base, you may have a character who you are discovering more about them through collecting items in the base and returning them to them, or
fetch quests.
So some fetch quests, absolutely. Which, you know, is again kind of a weird thing for a first person shooter to have in it, because you don't really have like low, dull moments like that, and you have a good emotional payoff when you do. And you have weird things too that just are like kind of strange in a first person shooter, like just the capacity to explore for what reason? I don't know, like grow plants in your room, I guess. You've got a atypical female lead character who is a character that you're interacting with through the majority of the game. You have
what's atypical about her?
Well, the fact that she is not, I think she was in like a wheelchair and, she.
That's you.
What's that?
That's you. You're in the wheelchair. Oh, you're talking about, okay, no, I know exactly. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about your love interest. Go on. You're correct.
I mean, and she hails from a previous, like universe of that series, which is also kind of weird.
Yeah, she's really cool. I'm not going to argue that she's not cool. What I'm trying to argue is that, like, the elements that you're drawing to are very small in relation to the vast majority of the game, which is
8 hours long.
Yeah, like you.
It's a short game that does a lot of really cool things that first-person shooters don't do.
I'm not arguing against that, but I'm just saying that the degree to which it does those things is to such a small degree that it doesn't define the game for me. It's great, and it makes the game a contender for me, but your base is really tiny, and the times in the game where you're kind of enjoying the story, you really felt to me like I was just walking through cutscenes. Even in the concentration camp,
okay,
I felt like I was walking through a cutscene, and there was a level in the middle of it.
It felt like a cutscene more so than it felt like a piece of gameplay when you're walking around the camp, interacting with individuals and just kind of like having this freedom to explore an area that you've never been able to in a game before.
That area, the actual area where there are actually people in that level is super tiny. And when you meet the one person you're supposed to meet, that's a cutscene.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go into a part of the level where there is no one else but the enemies, and that is the largest part of it. And then you go back out into the cutscene area, and then there's a boss fight.
You're right. The game still remains a first-person shooter. It does not become like a racer, or it doesn't do the Bayonetta thing where it totally changes its gameplay like midway through the game. It is still a first-person shooter.
But that, to me, that's like the core of your argument.
No, my argument is it is a first-person shooter, and it does pacing, and it bends the genre so well.
Okay, well, we just said it didn't.
What's that?
We just said it didn't.
That it does pacing well?
No, we just said it doesn't bend the genre so well.
I think it does bend the genre really well by introducing a bunch of things that you typically don't see in first-person shooters.
For seconds. Fleetingly.
Well, and then seconds fleetingly in a very short, concentrated game has a lot of impact.
It seems like the argument is down to Griffin sees this game as really solid with some interesting innovations versus a game which may have some really wonderful moments but surrounds them with a lot of bloat.
No, I completely agree with Griffin. I'm just kind of being devil's advocate to show that it's not perfect so that we can say that Dragon Age is the game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm just being middle of the road.
Yeah, Jeff, I, in talking through this, I'm starting to see kind of what it's crystallizing in my mind, where Wolfenstein is its concentration. Like, it is a lot of things extremely well done in a way that you typically don't see delivered immediately. And Dragon Age, in your opinion, is something that is interesting in the long term, and does have extensive moments that are interesting if you are willing to put in the time.
And neither one is objectively better.
So it's Mario Kart 8.
Yep. Yeah, Mario Kart 8. Game of Forever.
So it's near, isn't it, Jeff? Really, when it comes down to it, it's actually just near Game of the Year.
Yeah, it's near.
Forever.
Tomb Raider 2.
I don't know how we rectify this difference, because the problem is, I think it's going to be hard to get either party to budge, and I think just putting it to a vote is too tempting, because there's two of us. We need four people.
I think that a vote is impossible, because you two did not finish the game. That you would vote for?
Are you calling for disqualification? Is that what you're trying to do? Yeah.
If you want, I mean, I think that if you don't finish a game, you can't actually say it's Game of the Year. Because how would you know?
Well, that's just... But we're doing the assessment now. I mean,
what if the game actually breaks? Like, what if it bricks your console in the last 5 minutes of the game? You don't know this.
It can't take the good part away from me.
It can't take the good part of the game, but it is actually a disruptive and ugly game at that point.
What if the game orders a tactical nuke drops on my family?
Yeah, Griff, what if 2 years from now they release DLC with Wolfenstein that turns it into Lost and retroactively completely changes the story so that it's just Lost, the game?
What if when you finish Wolfenstein and install the worm on your PS4 that's stealing your personal information and trying to leave your
identity? I got docked.
Yeah. Griff, you didn't play Wolfenstein on PC like I did. I had the superior experience. You don't even know what you're saying. You don't even know anything about the game.
Wolfenstein for PlayStation 4 is
120 FPS per second per light year.
No, but actually, the inferior version of that was still superior to Dragon Age. So even having like a less full glass is still a full glass.
The problem is, so I wonder if we should, because we need to finish this game, and I think I'm well on my way at least, and I'm sure Jamie will get there too. But we weren't ready in time for Game of the Year. I mean, so how do we rectify that issue?
You're saying you want to throw all this out, and then you guys go finish Dragon Age, and then say it's the best game of the year because you finished it? And
how about this? We take a break. We play every single game that was released in 2014 all the way through.
Uh-huh. On every console.
And then we have to play each version. And then we come back and we do this all again.
I think that's a great idea. Actually, yes. I think we should go one step further and just... There shouldn't be video games anymore because it's all just a huge waste of humans.
Goodness.
You guys cannot admit that Dragon Age is a technically sound piece of software. That is impossible. You are lying to yourselves if you are.
But it doesn't have to be for us to consider it the
game
best
of the
game
year,
of the year.
Yeah.
It does, though. If you are, if your personal list is, I had a great time with this despite its flaws, then...
Yeah, that's what my list is.
But if you're
but
saying,
I think every title has flaws. But see, here's what I think is happening. We're taking a subjective discussion and you're slipping in a measure that you are deeming to be objective without actually without it's earning its objective title. Like just because Dragon Age has the flaws we've enumerated doesn't mean that its good parts that outweigh the flaws don't it doesn't mean that the sum total of Dragon Age is worse than Wolfenstein just because it has bloat. It may be that the good moments are so redeeming that they outweigh whatever Wolfenstein had to offer, which I think was the argument that Jamie was mounting. So I don't think we can ever say objectively that just because this game has X flaw, unless the flaw is you can't play the game, that it disqualifies it from being Game of the Year.
So both of you started out your enjoyment or your discussions for Dragon Age as, here's my favorite glitch.
Yeah, what's wrong with that? I love glitches.
I think that's a weird thing to recognize video games for, to promote them in spite of their technical flaws.
And that's why Assassin's Creed Unity is the game of the year. I don't know, man. I think it comes down to a difference of values. I mean, there are people, you know, Deadly Premonition was a glitchy game, and some people considered that one of the greatest games released.
Nobody would consider that Game of the Year.
Some people would.
They would be lying to themselves.
But especially in who does this discussion matter to? Nobody but me. So it's like, why do I have to
No, it matters to our audience, Jamie.
Why do I have to apply any modifiers to it other than I mean Wolfenstein is a fabulous game. It's an astonishing game. And amazing in a lot of ways, but I subjectively appreciate Dragon Age more despite its
great, and that's why you have a personal list for. Excellent, that's what that is for.
But how do we make a list for the masses, though? I don't know how we can make it.
Yeah, who are the masses?
We're back in Japan and we switch sides.
Who are the unwashed masses?
No, because remember, we had a discussion in Japan where young juvenile us were like, oh, you can be objective in a game review, and you were like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And we were like, we don't believe you. And then we grew up and we're like, oh my God, Griffin
was right all along.
Took the adult pills and we were little kids. And now we're having the opposite discussion.
But yeah. I think that the opposite discussion is, here are rules for what I consider game of the year. Like if something is, you have to set guidelines somewhere. Like
yeah.
if I was like, well, you know what? Actually, I think that Far Cry 4 was the best game this year. I played it for 1 hour, and I had the time of my life. Now, there's 39 more hours in that game that I think are going to be just as wonderful as the first. And even if they aren't, that 1 hour was the best moment of my life.
If you genuinely were saying that, I would not mount the argument that you're mounting against us, against you. I would say, that's great.
And then you would say, I agree. Okay, Far Cry 4, based on your criteria, is the best game this year.
I would say I played 70 hours of Dragon Age. So it's not 1 hour. It's 70 hours, which is a little different, I think.
Sure,
I mean, that's a lot of lifetime.
It is.
Given to a game. And unless it's a bad game, I feel like if you don't know by then there's a problem.
All right. I mean, I disagree. I think that something needs to be completed to give it the most meritorious judgment as possible.
But then do we just cut games because they haven't been completed?
Yeah. I think that if you're saying if you were trying to be.
But then are we making a Game of the Year list for the masses? Or are we just making a Game of the Year list based off the shit we played?
Well, I think that if we want to make a case for the masses, we've already done it. That's what the point of recording all this is. Because, I do, despite your guys mocking, think that there are people out there who listen to this and actually enjoy it. So, if they can't tell by now, Wolfenstein is a great game. And so is Dragon Age, according to you guys. And there's also some other good stuff on this list. And we've got to a point where it's just like, it's almost irreconcilable because, you know, it's a matter of taste at this point.
But how would we ever reconcile that short of voting?
Well, I mean, how would we reconcile it? You would play through Wolfenstein and I would finish Dragon Age. And then we could actually say, you know, I've done it all. I've crossed the Rubicon, and this is what I feel. And then we could all be on the same page together.
Yes. Correct. I'm so confused.
I'm extremely confused.
Cranky Kong is the game of the year.
Yeah, no, Donkey Kong's Congo Bash. 2011.
I just don't know how we reconcile it because we have strongly held beliefs and I don't think anyone's willing to just let them go. So right. I think we just kind of have to let it hang there.
I mean, except that I played Dragon Age and it's not good.
But Jamie played both of them,
and he admits Wolfenstein's good.
But
I think Wolfenstein's liked great.
But I liked Dragon Age.
But it's not but a game.
I played Dragon Age for three times as long as I played Wolfenstein.
So?
I mean, I don't know. You were talking about hours and stuff, so I'm trying to get on your level with this stuff.
Listen, the longer a game is, the better it is.
Yeah.
I mean, so then World of Warcraft is still winning as game of the year because nobody's
World
finished
World of Warcraft
it, right?
is a game of forever, but we don't, you know, you can't even compete with that, so.
Yeah.
I'm so confused.
I mean, this stuff still needs to go in an order. We've done this before, so I don't understand how you guys can't think that it's doable now.
I think it's just because it's a deep divide. I think it's something that's hard to reconcile. Maybe we hash out the rest of the list real quick, and then we just kind of come back to these, give it one more jab, and then we might need to let it rest for a little while.
All right.
What do you guys think?
Sure.
I think we'll try.
All right.
For me, I would say MK8, Monument Valley. Then Super Smash.
Top three, right there.
Like, but below the two.
Oh, I thought you were saying that's it.
No. Like below the two that we were arguing about, I would say that after that, I like MK8 the best. I think that as time goes on, I think that I'm gonna be, if I like call you guys up and I'm like, hey, let's play some games, I think that's I might be reaching towards that one a little more. I don't know why. I agree. And then after that, Monument Valley, just because it was so different and offered an experience that I feel like I've never had, and I don't feel like anyone will ever really replicate, even though the core of the game has been done before. So I think that's pretty astounding. And then Smash Bros. Wii U after that, because it's a great game, but you know. It's Smash Bros.
Guys, should we just give Mario Kart 8 the game of the year?
Just do it.
I think that's the worst decision, but also the only decision to make.
The only game all three of us finished.
It's also unfinishable. It's also a silly little arcade game. But you know what? Maybe that's what this year needs.
Maybe. I think the argument the very intense and emotional argument we all had is a metaphor for 2014.
I think so. We're ready for games to be finished.
Oh gosh.
I think Saints Row 4 is the game of the year for 2015.
Hell yeah.
Because I just bought it for $5.
Nice.
That's a great choice. I can tell you that I did not put Smash Bros. Wii U on my Game of the Year list.
That's pretty telling.
Because I don't think I gave it a fair enough shake as I should have, so I don't feel it being on there. I played the Smash with you guys. I had fun with the little side games, but I feel like I missed a lot of content in that. And I felt like, you know, hey, I knew that you guys would put it far enough in your list that it would get due justice that it deserves. But I know that, you know, I didn't feel qualified putting it on my list because I know there were holes in what I thought about or in the content of that game that I missed.
If I applied Griffin's philosophy on this stuff to med school, I think I'd have killed myself like 2 years ago.
Well, that's why you're the one becoming a doctor in Wii. I was going to say, for me, Smash Bros. For Wii U is pretty much only the Four Glory multiplayer. Which is, it's funny because all the stuff that you guys are discovering, like the awesome music, can I tell you a secret? Almost all that music is from the last game. The stuff that's new hasn't been unlocked yet.
But what about all the music from the other games?
Can you listen to it?
I listen to every single song in the catalog.
I mean, like in the last games, can you sit down and the audio? Can you do that in the last games?
No, but I downloaded them and played them on my computer.
Okay, so
that doesn't count.
Yeah, so this game offers something that the previous games didn't.
Yes.
Like, if there was a director's commentary on a DVD, this is a feature that this game has that the other
No, you're right. It definitely offers the ability to play them. I guess for me, it wasn't the point I was getting at there with that was that
you're not a true Nintendo fan.
I had already experienced those songs, so they weren't particularly novel for me. Because I went through the list and I was like, oh, there's not a lot of new stuff on here. That's kind of a bummer.
Jeff is the Nintendo hipster of the group.
Oh, true.
No, yeah. And here I'll do the next hipster line. And all the stuff that was new was stuff that I'd already heard and enjoyed. I liked it before with school. Sorry. And I've done the event stuff before. I'm excited to dig into the events on this, although they feel pretty minor to me, just in terms of what I remember from them. I'll have a good time with them, I'm sure. But for me, pretty much the multiplayer is the meat that I care about in that game.
Sure.
Which, you know, it is what it is.
Yep.
So yeah, but I'm still okay with I'm pretty okay with what Jamie said. Monument Valley is kind of a wild card for me. I really like that game, but I don't know where to put it.
Got
to
keep it on the list now because it's on
it's
here.
There.
We only got five.
Yeah. We only got five. This is how I feel though. But
you guys didn't play my game, so
go ahead. I would love to have, but I didn't.
I played your game. I love your game.
You like my game?
I love your game.
Are you talking about the hentai game you've been working on?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I really wanted to have Stick of Truth done so I could weigh in on it and probably put it higher on this list. But that was a situation where I really had put almost no time into the game, and I didn't feel like I could offer a fair assessment. So maybe in a different assessment, this would be that would be on there.
I got an idea. How about this? Monument Valley 5.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with this.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Then how about
don't say Dragon Age.
Don't you dare.
How about Super Smash Bros. Number 4?
Yep. Well, yep. I'm with you.
All right.
You're locking them in.
All right.
Keep locking them in.
Now what
you
if
get, you get 4 out of 5 digits right and you win the car.
Now what if we get it down to the last, like, okay, so let's just say we got 3 left. Yeah. Mario Kart 8.
Yeah.
Super Smash Bros. Dragon Age Inquisition.
Yeah.
Wolfenstein. Those are the last 3. And those 3 need to go into the top 3 in some order.
This is true.
Uh-huh. I think the order's pretty obvious. I think that number 3 should be Dragon Age Inquisition. Number 2 should be Mario Kart 8. Number 1 should be Wolfenstein.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's the best games this year in that order.
I don't know.
Now, I know this is crazy. I know it's crazy because you can't finish Mario Kart 8. But we put it up there anyway. Just like you can't finish Smash Bros. But, you know, we put it in there anyway. That's a tough.
And you can't finish
tough.
Dragon Age. We put it in there anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're playing a three-legged race, you can't always expect to win.
I don't understand what they say.
Is that a saying?
Stitch in time saves 9.
Yeah.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
You finally watched it, Jamie.
No, I watched it right when you sent it out. I watched it 4 times.
Okay. You didn't say a word about it.
I've been singing it for months.
Also, okay, I think you sent it out.
I think that we will not be able to put Wolfenstein above Dragon Age or Dragon Age above Wolfenstein despite major glaring technical flaws and poor video game design choices. So I think the only choice we have to actually finish this is to say Mario Kart 8 is the best game of 2014. Because, hey, it's Mario Kart.
I'm kind of okay with this.
Yeah, I'm fine with this.
Griffin, you're going to die inside.
I mean, I feel like there's a bit of a cop out here where, obviously we can't convince each other that one is better than the other or but technically that, sound or whatever. But maybe that
speaks to the fact that neither game is the one that's going to be universally loved. And who can hate freaking Mario Kart 8?
Exactly. I think you're totally on. Like, I can play Mario Kart 8 with my wife.
Mm-hmm. It's so much fun.
Yeah. I mean, anybody can play it. It's pretty mindless, but also has a ton of competitive value to it.
Griffin, if you're averse to a tie for second place,
yep.
And you are,
yeah,
then I would be fine if Dragon Age doesn't take the top spot. I would be fine in putting Wolfenstein above Dragon Age because now I realize what we're doing. If we're really doing this for the unwashed masses, I think that Wolfenstein is the game that will appeal to more of them. And I don't think that your criteria that Jeff and I haven't completed the game, while I think that's kind of silly, I will agree that you're right. Something could happen at the end and it could just throw the whole thing into question for me. And I doubt that's going to be the case, but you're absolutely right. It could. So for that reason, I think that if you want to, and also Wolfenstein is a fabulous game. A lot of the points, a lot of the arguments that I was making before were arguments to just show that when you put the two up against each other, it's not like we're looking at one flawless paragon of a game and some modeled game.
I mean, I think Wolfenstein is pretty darn good.
No, I guess you're not hearing me. I completely agree. I think it's a fabulous, fabulous game, but I don't think it's like, if an alien came down to Earth and was like, you got to show me about these video games and you got to do it with just one of them.
And I would say,
because it's got to be the
check
perfect
this out.
One.
You just got to get out of the hinterlands. You just hear me out.
I wouldn't give him, in that situation, I would give him Dragon Age. I would not give him Wolfenstein, but I would.
with a lengthy caveat and a set of instructions about how to play well.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
A Kotaku guide about the different races.
and a map of where to find all the logging stands and quarries.
Also, advice about how to unlock your specialist ability. Can I just say, I'm okay with this too because mom and dad stopped fighting?
Yeah.
this feels okay.
I mean, I'm okay with this as well if we're saying Mario Kart. I think we need to talk a little more about Mario Kart though. Like it Jeff, you're obviously the expert here. I think that by just kind of stepping back away from these hour and a half long arguments that we just had about these two games, which are good. We may have missed the boat on talking about how good Mario Kart 8 is.
It's a great game. It is. It is very well designed.
You remember the internment camp level?
And there's a lot of bloat in the beginning when you're going through the 50cc class stuff.
Right. Yeah. I really like that transgender racer.
Leave the goddamn mushroom cup. Actually, the mushroom cup is pretty fantastic. It's probably one of my favorite cups.
Go ahead. No.
I was going to say it's the level design is awesome. The it looks freaking amazing. I don't know how they coax those visuals out of that hardware. It's the perfect balance. It's not stupid and ridiculous like the Wii version, where just everything blows you up all the time.
Yeah,
it's also. It's also you get things and they help you do better and it's fun. That's what Mario Kart is.
It feels like, as you had said, like there's enough of a, much like I think off air discussions we've had about Smash Bros. This game has equal, if not more, potential in my mind. You may disagree with the capacity to have an underdog victory, but still rebuff that with a certain level of skill.
Hmm.
Like it serves both audiences better in both directions.
I think so. I think that the thing that redeems Smash and has always redeemed Smash is that you can tweak stuff to meet the needs of a particular community. But I think that items entirely off is going to turn off the casual community, and items entirely on is going to turn off the hardcore community. Whereas Mario Kart, vanilla game, is perfect.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
So vanilla game wins game of the year.
Yes.
All right.
Vanilla
wash masses. What, Jamie?
Vanilla wafer.
All right. So at 2 hours long after this heated discussion, we have Mario Kart 8, 2014's Game of the Year by Boss Barrel. Second game of the year, I guess, second runner-up, Wolfenstein, The New Order, for whatever console or PC platform of choice you want to play it on.
Master Race.
Three, you would apply that to Dragon Age Inquisition due to just whatever a certain hold it has over you.
And I can feel the pain, Nurfin.
I mean, it's hard to say something's bad after you play it for 80 hours, sure, right?
just like Binding of Isaac.
Yep. wait, are you just saying you want to put Binding of Isaac as Game of the Year? And we just get rid of all this?
I played it the longest, so probably.
But did you finish it?
Oh, I don't know. I did not want to.
I'm kidding. three, or what is it, four? We've got Super Smash Brothers for the Wii U. For very similar reasons as Mario Kart 8, it delivers and is a ton of fun to just pick up and play. In a year when we just need fun without any kind of agenda in video games.
Especially a feminist one.
And finally, we've got Pulling Up the Rear, Monument Valley. Clearly, the number one game I need to play, since I have not. For the iPad, redeeming the device. So, that's it.
We did it.
We did it. We solved video games. We solved them, guys. Congratulations.
Is this the part at the end of the reality TV show where after all the ladies have thrown like water on each other and like clawed each other's arms and shit, we all get together and the music is playing and we talk about the things that we like about each other?
No, this is the part where Griff and I just have like primal ball slapping makeup sex.
Have you been playing Cards Against Humanity?
Yep.
Jeff, what you're referring to is when we do the next episode, when we were all sitting on the couches with our respective couples, and then we go through awkwardly this other list where we just make snide sniping remarks about how the other person's choices was inferior. Best new character, probably from a real shitty game.
Can I spoil best new character right now?
Nope.
Okay.
No, go for it.
I was going to say,
give him something. A little something.
I nominate nobody. Seriously, I nominate nobody. But I haven't played Wolfenstein, so for what it's worth.
Well, nobody on Wolfenstein's in that list, so there you go.
All right, I nominate nobody.
So that category.
What about the Jew Magic Master from Wolfenstein? He's pretty cool.
He is a pretty cool guy.
Next time.
Yeah. Next time, guys, come back for more. Thanks for listening, everybody, for another year of off and on podcasting. Irregular, your most irregular podcast.
You know what they say, though? They say that when you enforce something irregularly, the reward is the most palpable.
Oh, that's true. I mean,
the scientists, they say that.
I recall listening to A Life Well Wasted, and those were the best episodes ever because they came out like on like some weird foreign planet lunar cycle.
Yes. And whenever the guy who ran that show talked, he sounded like the most disaffected bastard ever. He had the most hipster voice.
You watch him.
I love that guy. I love that podcast, but he had major hipster voice syndrome.
Yeah, but he was doing it before everybody else.
That's true.
That's the whole point of a hipster right there.
So, again, drawing to the close, thank you guys, Jamie, Jeff. It's always a pleasure to do this with you. Whenever we do it, audience, I know you're out there. Thank you for listening and downloading through whatever means you do. This has been Boss Barrel Radio, hopefully, in 2015, coming to you through different means, through different venues, and hopefully in a more regular fashion. I have been Griffin Hoffman, and this is Game of the Year discussion for 2014 from Boss Barrel Radio.